No one really knows Ron Van Dam. He's an enigma wrapped in a mystery, cloaked in secrets, stuffed in between two pieces of French toast encased in a pancake, smothered in cheese and deep fried until golden brown, then duct taped into a rusty toolbox, packed into a used Amazon shipping container with gaffer's tape, and mailed overnight to a bunker in Siberia where it's kept in a locked vault, whose combination is known only to a mute priest with a bad memory. So yeah, he's sort of a keeps-to-himself kind of guy. You're listening to that man of mystery, Ron Van Dam, on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, whatever.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? No, I'm not him. No, I'm not her either. Come on. Get off my back. Welcome to the program. Today's show, I think you might find a bit fascinating. I don't know. I'm not you. You know, there's that expression, you know, if you could only put yourself in my shoes. You don't want to do that. It's bad enough you got to wear somebody else's shoes when you go bowling. But, you know, you don't want to put somebody else's shoes on. That's like saying, you know, you don't know what life is like until you've walked in my underpants. You don't want it. No, don't. No. I'll figure out what life is like without walking in your underpants. Ooh, what a horrible example that was. That was the analogy from hell, but it's accurate. I thought today, on a lighter side, that we would talk about how in different parts of this United States country that we live in, you know, the one with the crumbling democracy, you know, that one, I thought we might take a look at some of the common items that we all use every day, but in different parts of this vast country, this vast deference, we call them different things. You would figure in one country, you're kind of being united in what you call various objects. But because this country is so vast and has so many different dialects, I mean, you go to California, you're eating kale. You go to Texas and you got this twang in your accent and everybody's talking about, things. And and then you've got the Boston, and they talk with an accent, and you feel like saying, "What the hell are you talking like that for? Where the hell are you from?" It's we New Yorkers, you know, they all sound tough when actually they are. So it's just different. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about, because I believe that's called for at this juncture in the program. Let's take word number one. Depending on where you live. That stuff that you drink every day that's corroding your insides, depending on where you live, you would call it soda or pop or Coke. Coke is the generic for all cola. You know, you walk into a restaurant and you say, "What would you like to drink?" That's the server, by the way. It's my impression of the server. "And what would you like to drink?" And your response, depending on where you live, would be very different. You might just say, "Oh, just have a Coke." "Well, we don't have Coke. Is Pepsi okay?" "No, that disgusting, putrid beverage. No." Of course you say that's okay. That's what everybody says. But we call it, the brand name represents the entire line of colas, which is not fair. Remember there used to be an RC Cola? Who drinks that shit? Anyway, soda is what I call it. I'll have a soda. Actually, I say Coke. I do. I think I'm guilty of that. I lived in Rochester, New York for about 2 years because I couldn't take it no more. Lovely people up there, but freaking cold and snows every second of the winter. They call it pop, which you would think, you know, if you're watching the Andy Griffith Show in Mayberry and you're sitting on the porch, you're drinking some pop. That's what they called it. So I don't understand why that happened, but that's an example of what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Those things you put on your feet, those comfortable shoes, do you call them sneakers or tennis shoes? I call them sneakers. I guess so. You're sneaking around. They're so quiet. Where'd you come from? You snuck up on me. It's because I'm wearing sneakers. No, those are tennis shoes. You know, I don't play tennis. Well, they're still the shoes of tennis. You can't wear them for any other sport. Look, they're tennis shoes. It depends on where you live. It does. I live in Massachusetts. Thank you very much. They have these traffic circles. And they're traffic circles. They are circles that handle traffic. That's the best way of describing them. But people up here in Massachusetts call it a rotary. I confuse that with a rotary club. I don't. They're rotaries. Why don't you just call it a Lazy Susan? Basically, that's what that is, too. And apologies to people named Susan, by the way. In other countries and in other parts of this country, they call them roundabouts, which is kind of weird. You're calling it something that has a verb in it. Odd. But another example. There's crayfish. They are crayfish. You call them crayfish. They are crayfish. But in certain parts of the country, they're called crawdads or crawdaddies. Sounds like a disease that daddy got when he sat on the toilet in Bermuda. They're crawfish. Crawfish or crayfish? Craw or cray? I don't know. Now I don't know. Again, another example. When you're in a public place and you're bending down to one of those machines to suck water into your mouth, is that a water fountain or is that a bubbler? I think it's a water fountain because that's what it looks like it's doing. Bubbler? That could be anything. In other words, if I eat too fast, I get a lot of gas. Am I a bubbler? In a way, I am. Next example. That thing that the water comes out of in a sink, is that a faucet? Or is it a spigot? Or is it a tap? It's a faucet. But a lot of places in the country, they call it something different. That's, by the way, is a French-inspired word, faucet, just to give you a little heads up on that. All right, let's move on. Lightning bug or firefly? Interesting. That is depends again on which region of the country you're in. I've always called them fireflies, even though they're not on fire, basically. They are more like lightning bugs. They mimic the look of lightning. You know, there's a flash of light all of a sudden, and then they're gone at night. They're not really on fire, but I do call them fireflies. Here's another one. Daddy long legs, which, by the way, are some of the most disgusting creatures in the world. Daddy long legs. I mean, yeah. That's something like, you know, that's like what you call a relative. Or is Aunt Sally coming over for Thanksgiving? Yes. And what about daddy long legs? Or do you call them granddaddies? Some people call those little spider things granddaddies. This is getting real. Let's see what else here. Do you call the stuff that you put on spaghetti, do you call it tomato sauce or gravy? Now, if you're of the Italian or Mediterranean persuasion, you might call it gravy. If you're not, everybody else would call it tomato sauce or spaghetti sauce. What do you call it? Do you care? I don't. It's not gravy. Stop it. All right, here's one that is so regional it's not funny, and nothing's really funny here. That sandwich that you get in a deli or in a particular sandwich shop, do you call it a sub? Do you call it a hero? Do you call it a hoagie? Or do you call it a grinder? All right, let's break this down. It's none of those. It's a freaking sandwich. A submarine is what they call it. I guess the roll looks like a submarine. Your imagination as to relating various shapes to objects, calling a small loaf of bread a submarine, you're really stretching it unless it's submerged in water, and you don't want to do that. It'll become too soggy. So a submarine is weird. I do call it a sub, but I don't know why. Is it a hero? Didn't save anybody's life unless they're extremely hungry and hadn't eaten in like 6 years. You give them a sandwich, they're going to call you a hero. A hoagie. I don't know what that is. I that sounds like something that hangs from your groin. I don't know what a hoagie is. Excuse me, I don't know you, but you got a hoagie like hanging from your, yeah, there you go. A grinder? Why? How? What about a sandwich is a grinder? What? But in various parts of the country, if you don't say it right, they won't know what you're talking about. When you're cutting up a submarine roll, you know, one of those long rolls, or Italian bread or something, or French bread, is the end of it, the very end of it, you call it the heel, the end, or the crust? Well, to me, the crust is like all over the bread, so I don't understand that part. Do you call it the end? Yeah, it is the end of the freaking loaf. Is it the heel? Now we're getting into shoe territory. I don't know. Do you call it a milkshake or a frap? That depends on where you live. Yeah, if you're one part of the country and you walk into a soda shop or a Coke shop, whatever you call it, and you order a milkshake, they'll say, oh, you mean a frap? And you'll say, I don't know who you are. I call it a milkshake. My God, frap, I don't even understand what that is. That sounds like something you wear. It's cold outside. Get me my frap. Do you put your groceries in a bag or a sack? A bag? A sack is burlap, isn't it? But people from different parts of the country call them those different things. When you go shopping, do you put your food in a shopping cart? I do. Or do you put it in the carriage? That sounds too British. Or do you put it in a buggy? That's ridiculous. Who says that they go shopping to pick up a buggy? Come on, man. Give me a break on that one. That thing that you use to change the channels on the TV when you're sitting on the couch. This is a good one. Do you call it a remote control? Do you call it a clicker? Do you call it a zapper? Or do you call it what I call it, a channel changer? What does that thing do? It changes the channels. Remotely? Yes. So it's a remote control channel changer? That's too long, but yeah. Does it also adjust the volume? Yes. So it's a volume adjuster. Oh, wow. Wow. I call it a channel changer. Clicker, remote control, zapper, channel changer. What the hell is that thing? Is it a poached egg or is it a dropped egg? I know the dropped egg, I get it. You drop it in water. Poached is you're poaching it in water. So I think it's a 50-50. I don't say dropped egg because that sounds like I did something really wrong. What do you want for breakfast? Tell you what, go into the refrigerator, take out an egg and drop it on the floor. Shouldn't I be poaching it? That's a better idea, yes. Yes, it is a better idea. You call them pancakes or flapjacks? I call it a pancake. I know in various parts of the country, these are flapjacks. They are jacks that have been flapped. Some people call them hotcakes. It's a hot cake. It's a pancake. Give me a break. Hey, when you want to get rid of your stuff, you have a yard sale or a garage sale or a tag sale? That's a good question. That is very regional as well. I call it a yard sale. You're selling your yard. Garage sale, you actually could sell your garage. I assume if someone is having a garage sale, they're selling their cars. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. Sofa, couch, or Davenport? I've not heard the Davenport one. Sofa or couch? I do couch. Sofa is something my mother would call it. You know, like, don't sit on the sofa. That sounds very proper. Couch. Couch is a lazy place. Do you call it a lollipop or a sucker? I call it a lollipop. A sucker is somebody that I meet usually who can be very easily sold any item and will pay any amount of money to have it. That's a sucker. Anyway, those are some words, and there are others, but those are examples of how, depending on where you live in this vastly different country. You know, there's a Mason-Dixon line that kind of cuts through half the country horizontally. Everybody north of the Mason-Dixon line is pretty much a Democrat. Everybody south is pretty. That's kind of changed a little bit, but there are different dialects in the north and different in the south. The weather is totally different. There was actually a war at one part in our history. I know you never went to school. You don't know this, but there was a civil war where we killed our own people for no reason whatsoever. And there's a Mason-Dixon line. I traveled once from Boston, the Boston area where I live, down to Charlotte, North Carolina, because I was visiting someone who had died. I wasn't actually visiting them. I was going to a funeral. And I decided to drive because I don't like to fly. My wings are a little parched at this time, so I like to drive. I get more of the Americana. I stay in a little hotel, have a little dinner, and, you know, something. So I drove down, and I was in Virginia, and there was actually a sign saying you are now crossing the Mason-Dixon line. And I don't know who these people are. I assume there was a Mason and there was a Dixon. And they just said, I've had enough. I'm drawing the line here. But it's interesting because as soon as you drive over this fictitious line, things do completely change. It's very, very strange. Here's the odd part, and I know it's mythical, but nonetheless, it was nice weather driving north of the Mason-Dixon line. I go over the Mason-Dixon line, and it starts raining. Wow, that's weird. All right. I have an interesting guest coming up momentarily on the program. I hope you find the guest as interesting as I probably will. I don't know. All right. But first, we're going to take a very, very quick, or maybe not so quick, commercial break. Do you like icky, gooey stuff? I know I don't.
Studies show that 1 in every 8 Americans suffers from icky personal stuff, from the embarrassing to the grotesque, from the what is this to the oh my God, what is that? chances are someone you know, or maybe even you, are dealing with icky personal stuff right now. But there is help. If you or someone you love has icky personal stuff happening, call the Icky Personal Stuff Hotline at 1-899-YOU. That's 1-899-399-9999. Talk with trained counselors who can assess and recommend help for whatever icky personal stuff you may be going through, no matter where it's coming from or what it looks or smells like. And don't worry and don't be embarrassed. Our non-judgmental icky personal stuff counselors are familiar with many of the more common and, frankly, uncommon things that can happen to various parts of the body. Seriously, these people have seen some unpleasant shit. Chunky things, oozy things, flaky things. This one guy who had fluids coming out of places most people don't even know they have. Fluids that his dog actually ran away from. Believe us, you may think you have it bad, but they've seen worse. Most likely. So don't wait until your icky personal stuff becomes tragic. And believe us, it does. Just ask a lady who basically fused to her living room couch and they had to use a blowtorch really carefully to melt whatever it was that was like caked between her and the couch, and it was coming out of this like hole the size of a half dollar, and it let out this high-pitched squeal when it came free of the fabric, like when you release a balloon real slow, that yeah, that happened. So before it happens to you, call the Icky Personal Stuff Hotline, 1-899-YOU. Call now, especially if there's like blue stuff on you. Like if you leave bread out too long, that color blue. Yeah, call today.
Dr. Glenn Ramsey joins us now. He's chair of the College of American Pathologists Transfusion Committee. That's a long title, but that means a lot of things. Thanks for being with us today. How are you?
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Well, we're talking about donating blood and blood shortages, supply-wise. This seems to be a constant situation. Is it still of the same magnitude, or are we in a different place?
Well, it's an ongoing issue. We've gotten a little bit better this past few months, but we're going into the winter season again. There's going to be a lot of illness, and people still need their surgery and so forth. So it's an ongoing issue for sure. For folks who are interested in donating, they should be at least 16 years old. They should be at least 110 pounds, and they should be feeling well that day when they come in. They ask questions about whether it's okay for them to donate for their safety and also for the safety of their recipients. There have been a few deferral rules that have been changed in the past year or two. People who are taking medications because they're exposed to someone with HIV, there are some deferrals about that. But many other deferral periods for travel or infection, have been changed from 12 months to 3 months. And for folks who have been deferred in the past because they had lived in Europe for a while, that has been lifted. So there's a number of changes recently, and it's good to inquire about whether you're eligible if you've been deferred before.
All right. One of the layman's concerns are that if I donate blood, I've got that less in me. How long does it take to regenerate? Is it okay to do? How much blood is really being taken? That kind of thing.
Oh, great questions. It's about a pint that for a blood donation. It's about another way to say it's about 15 or 16 ounces or so, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's not very much, and it gets replenished within a day or two for the donor. So it's very easy and simple to donate, it's really appreciated by the patients for sure, and the medical community.
Right. I know there are various blood types. I don't think I even know mine. I guess we should all know our blood type next time we go to the physician. We should ask at least. I guess some blood types are more conducive than others. Some are more rare, and I guess those are the ones that you actually need more so?
Well, we need all blood types for all different patients. The ones that we can give in the emergency are group O red cells can be given in emergencies, and Rh negative can be given in emergencies for young women of childbearing age. So there are a few special blood groups, but we need them all, really.
Okay. There have been a few mass casualties recently. There seem to be more and more every year, unfortunately. So the need probably is growing.
Yeah, it's really an issue. Your listeners remember the Las Vegas shooting 5 years ago this month, where over 500 units of blood were given very, very quickly. Those units had to be on the shelf already. They'd been donated in the days or weeks before the tragedy occurred. So it's important to have maintain a blood supply at all times, because you never know what's going to happen. The Boston Marathon, I remember a few years ago. Yeah. Where a blood was needed right away, and those unfortunate things happen, and it's important to keep the blood supply available as best we can.
Is there a season? Is this a seasonal situation? Not talking about any mass casualties, but is there a seasonal need involved?
Well, there's a seasonality to the blood supply. At the end of the summer here, things get a little tight around the holidays, mm-hmm. and people are traveling or away, or that gets a little tight. So there's some little bit of a season to the supply. Good question.
Before blood can be donated, I assume that you're tested and make sure that your blood is indeed of quality, and also that you are able to give blood so that you're not affected by this as a donor, right?
Right. You get an interview, you get questions to make sure that it's safe for you to donate. There's a quick check of your blood count to make sure it's high enough to donate. And the donor staff is very skilled in their work and they take care of donors very well. So, and you get cookie or an orange juice too. So what's not to like?
Cookie and orange juice. Well, I didn't know that. Okay. And when I was younger on TV, people used to sell their blood. I mean, is that still a thing?
Well, there's another process for folks who donate blood that goes into manufacturing for some of the proteins that are given for special treatments. Uh-huh. So there is a separate kind of donation for that. But okay. But hospitals, we normally think of blood at the hospitals. Those are all from generally volunteer donors at the blood supplier level. Right. So there's it's a different situation.
Asha, a real quick question. Cases of diabetes has skyrocketed in this country because because of culture, hereditary, but basically the way that we eat. Is this a factor in donating blood?
It's not a restriction to donate, as long as you're feeling well that day. Okay. Of course, people with diabetes have to watch their intake and their situation pretty closely, but as long as they're feeling well that day, it's not a problem.
Excellent. Yeah, I know when there's a tragedy or some type of mass casualty, people they really do step up, but what you're saying is you don't have to wait for that to occur. There's a blood supply that's needed anyway, so don't wait for that.
Exactly. People need blood for every day. For every 2 seconds, someone gets transfused country. But only about 3% of the eligible individuals actually donate. And some of our blood components have a very short shelf life of only a few days, that we can't store them very long.
Oh.
So we need a really constant donation supply every day to maintain our treatments.
Well, you've given me some information I didn't know about, to be honest with you. Where can we go for even more information?
Well, you can check with your local blood suppliers up there, or if you're not sure where to go, you can go to aabb.org, and they have a blood donor locator system that you can easily find where you can find more information.
Perfect. Hey, Dr. Ramsey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you. Well, that'll do it for me today. You have been wonderful. I don't know how you do it. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show, but until then, I wish you peace.